Nice crowd. How's everybody doing? Great to see everybody, and thanks for coming to this year's State of the Franchise event. And thanks to the great folks here at the Cobb Energy Center for hosting. We are 116 days away from the Falcons season opener. It's great to have all of you here tonight, and particularly we want to welcome those who are watching via our live stream tonight at AtlantaFalcons.com. Of course, we've got plenty for you tonight. You're going to hear from President and CEO Rich McKay, General Manager Thomas Dimitroff, and also the head coach of the Falcons, Mike Smith, as well. So we look forward to that, and we'll also get to some questions as well. We'll start the program, though, with the President and CEO of your Atlanta Falcons. Please welcome Rich McKay.
People here tonight, welcome. It is awfully nice to be here. Thank you to the voice of the Falcons, Wes Durham. I know this, my talk will be much better than Freddie's talk because Freddie can't talk, and I'm really happy about that. I think he might have gone home even because I think it's past his bedtime, but appreciate all of you guys coming here tonight. This is an event we really like doing. We like doing it because it gives you an opportunity. Is Freddie around here somewhere? Told you, I'm telling you, every time I go somewhere, he's a problem. Where is he? Yeah, here he goes. It's the best speech he's ever made in his life. You guys want to hear him sing Star Spangled Banner? Go ahead, Freddie, give it your best shot. That's it, you're done. Okay. All right, well, thank you, my man. See you. He's always, I always get nervous whenever I speak anywhere with Freddie because I'm never quite sure what he might do. So tonight what we wanted to do is give you a chance to hear from Thomas, hear from Coach Smith, tell you a little bit about our football team, what we've done this offseason, what we expect to do next year. Our expectations are as high as yours, so they'll give you the whys, and you'll be able to ask questions about how we're going to get there. What I also like to do in this is look back a little bit, and I think that that's a little bit of what the video does. And for us, looking back was fantastic. It was an unbelievable year. I hope one that you all enjoyed. It was certainly special. 13-3 is a pretty good record, last time I checked. You know, I think the phrase we use sometimes, you hear it in sports too often, but I think it absolutely applies in this instance, is I think this was a football team and an organization that went to the next level. Now we got to go just a couple more levels, but you guys, I'm sure all of you, because you're all season ticket holders, you were all there at the Dome, and I hope that a couple things that you experienced were really positive. Number one, the energy in the Dome last year, amazing, amazing. I think when I think back to the Carolina Panther game, I think that when I still see Matt throwing the ball, I still see the ball fluttering through the air and thinking to myself, there's no way they're going to let Roddy White get behind him for that play. But I also think of the sense of community that you create in the Georgia Dome and the atmosphere you create. I think the one thing that we know, because we go play every week in other stadiums, some stadiums are actually very comfortable to go play in, and some are not so comfortable. And I think what we're trying to do at the Georgia Dome is we're trying to make it really comfortable for you and not very comfortable for them. And you've done a really good job of that. I think we all, you know, any time you play in as big a game as we played in at the end of the year, it's emotionally tough to come off of that game. And I think all of you came off of it probably the same way we did. You're emotionally a little challenged. I want to say thank you to all of you for kind of rising back up, if you will, because that's what we do. That's what Falcons do. I think that's the way the phrase goes, right, Wes? Yeah, thank you. So we do one quick thing, and that is we move right forward. So let's look forward a little bit. Next season, why are we optimistic? Well, I have two men here tonight that will clearly take you through that, and that's Thomas and Smitty. They'll take you through that. But before they do, there's a couple things I want to do personally and want to do on behalf of Arthur and our organization, and that is kind of say thank you to Thomas and to Mike for what they've done and what they've brought to our organization. Let me tell you why first. 5 years ago when they came here, we were in a situation where, and I live part of that as you did, where we were really challenged, and credibility was an issue, and the franchise was an issue, and they helped put us on the right track. How'd they do it? Well, 5 consecutive winning seasons, 4 of the last 5 in the playoffs, 3 consecutive playoffs. And although we're only second in the NFL in wins over that period of time, so we apologize for that because the Patriots have more, we are first in the NFC in wins in the last 5 years. So if you guys could just do me one favor, if I can just make, and they're not going to be happy I do this, but if I could just make Thomas and Smitty walk out here and you guys could just kind of show them how happy you are of what they've done. We do that. Coach, come on out here. Thomas, come on out here. Thanks very much for doing that. They clearly deserve it. I think that both Coach and Thomas would tell you that there's a lot of people that go into success. It's assistant coaches, it's the scouts, it's the football operations staff, it's the players. That we had players there today working out. You know what? That's what they do. They get themselves ready, they go to training camp, and they produce on Sundays. It's the people that work in our front office staff. It's the people that handle our sponsorships. It's all the people that work in our organization deserve a round of applause for that. But you know who else does? It's you. And you guys are the fans, and you make it all happen. Arthur has a phrase that's very true, that you know, if we had this good a football team and we had this great organization that we're all proud of and we went to on Sunday and we played in the Georgia Dome and none of you were there, wouldn't be a real good event. You make it all happen. You create the energy, the passion. It's not just the investment that you make of your finances, but the investment you make of your emotions. You wear the jerseys, you wear the pride, and you rise up. And I just want to say on behalf of all of us, thank you very much. Before I turn it over to Thomas, I'm going to talk a little bit about stadium. And then in the Q&As, we'll get to all your Q&As about the stadium too. But I'll tell you a little bit about where we are. This stadium effort that we've been through has taken a long time. It was a long journey. Why did we do it? We did it simply because our lease in the Georgia Dome was going to expire in 2017. It's a good place to play, great place to see games. I hope you all enjoy coming there. We've tried to invest in the facility itself and make it as good as it can be, and we've tried to make the experience as good as it can be, and I hope you have enjoyed it. It was time for us in our mind to create a long-term solution and one that could really benefit Atlanta in the long term, and that's what we've worked on. I want to thank the mayor's office, the governor's office, the state, the Georgia World Congress Center, Invest Atlanta, all the people, because this was a true public-private partnership, and one in which we're very proud of the structure we created. We used a hotel-motel tax that basically is a tax on out-of-towners to help fund a building in which we're going to take the lion's share of the risk, and we hope we've created a public-private partnership that's not just a good partnership, but is a model for what can be done. We're going to take all the risk with respect to cost overruns, with respect to operations, with respect to maintenance, all there is, and Arthur and obviously the Falcons will make a huge commitment that way. I think the other thing that Arthur's committed to, and I think you've heard him say it many times, is the impact that we want to make in the community. That is a very big challenge. His foundation is committed $15 million. I'm sure that with the time, effort, and everything that goes into it, our commitment will go way beyond that. But the challenge is great, and that's where we're going to need everybody's help as we try to impact the west side of Atlanta. The stadium can be a catalyst, but there's so much more that needs to be done, and so many more people that are going to have to help us get it done, and I think that's a challenge that we look forward to. We can't have the legacy of this stadium be, oh, it's a fantastic stadium, but you know what? The west side of Atlanta didn't get the real benefit. It can't be that same story that I think we got a little bit out of the Georgia Dome, which has been a fantastic facility, did not have the impact on the west side of Atlanta that was hoped. So that's a challenge of ours. Historically wise, I've told you why we did it. We tried to create a long-term solution. What I kind of want to take you through is what are our goals? What are our goals of a new stadium? Well, I'll tell you, pretty simple. Number one, it's got to be a game changer in stadiums. It has to be a game changer. We've gone 20 years where really stadiums look the same today as they did then. They're just bigger. Some of them have weird things hung down in the middle. It's got to be a game changer. And our object is to create a game changer. And to create a long-term solution for Atlanta, you should all be very proud that the city that you live in and support and the region that you live in and support, we are the absolute kings of the Southeast for all major sporting events. We are the hosts. We do it better than anybody. Our hope is that we become the hosts, the best hosts in the United States, not just the Southeast. So what we want to do with this stadium, because we have an airport, we have MARTA, we have hotels, we have nightlife, we have restaurants, we have Lenox, we have a lot of things to bring people here and entertain them. We hope this stadium can give us the ability we don't want to host the Super Bowl. That is not an object. Our object is to host Super Bowls. And we want to host national championship games. We want to host the Final Four. What you saw in the Final Four was what the Georgia Dome did, what Atlanta did, the way all of you participated in hosting that event was magnificent. It couldn't have come off any better for us as a city and for the people that visited us. We need to do more of those, and that's what this facility hopefully will do. We want to create an iconic destination. You hear Arthur say that all the time. What does he mean by it? Well, he described it this way one time, and I think it's a good way to describe it. When the people land in Atlanta, they get off the plane, they get on MARTA, they get off a stop or two before they're supposed to, and they walk over to the new stadium and say, wow, that is really spectacular. That's what iconic is. It will drive people here. They'll want to see it. They'll want to be a part of it. Inside, we hope it's a game changer in the fan experience. If it isn't, then we didn't do our job. Your experience in that building should be new, different, much better. We talk about it every single day as to how we have to change the fan experience on a go-forward basis. Not because your experience isn't good now, but because we want to make it better. So those are kind of our objects. The last thing we talk about, and we just talked about it again today, is how can we do a project that's sustainable in a way that hasn't been done in a modern stadium? How can we do it in a way where when people look at the green technologies that have been gone into buildings, they can look and say, boy, it went into this stadium and they did something different and special in making the building more sustainable. That's what we need to do in this project, and that'll be an object of ours. So the architectural process is over. We selected the architect. There were 10 incredible submissions. We narrowed it to 5. We did the final interviews. We selected one. We selected a company, 360 Architecture, which is a company out of Kansas City. They did MetLife Stadium. They've done a lot of stadiums. But what really caught us was some of the presentation material they gave us, some of which I'll cover in a second, and I'll show you a couple of videos just to get you a little interested in it and pique your interest. You probably looked at some of their designs online. You probably saw some of that stuff. I'm not sure that you'll ever see the final look exactly like that, but the one thing I think those concepts did was it was an indication of the creativity of 360 as an architectural firm, and that really, you know, piqued our interest. So when I say why, I think the slide that they probably have up is that slide was, this was their first slide, and this slide spoke to us because it's the way we see it, which is, you see the words, permission to challenge everything, act responsibly, experts outside the industry, embrace change, reimagine the game day experience, and reject current thinking. That's kind of the way we see stadiums today. We need to move the needle and make it a very unique experience that you can't wait to get inside of, not just because of our football team, but because of the other aspects that we will bring to the game day experience. So that's a little bit about where we are. I'll show you to tell you that there was a little buzz created about the what 360 did. They just had a couple ideas. One of the things they did in our presentation is they gave us a set of cards that were on there were 8 of us that were sitting as the committee for the selection, and they gave us a set of cards, and the cards all had some real, let's just call them challenging questions that were kind of out there. What if all concessions were done by food trucks? What if just crazy things that were just to get you thinking? And I thought one of the best questions they had in there was about midway through the pack, they had a card that said, what if you just hired us right now? And I thought, you know, that was a good, I thought that was a, That was a good thing, and that those of us that have more ADD than others were reading through the cards in a hurry, and we laughed earlier than others. So that was good. So let me show you a little Dave Letterman video that was generated by the stadium talk, and then I'll show you something 360 prepared for you guys tonight, just to give you a little insight. So if we can show my man Dave Letterman, we'll get moving.
Gentlemen, here's the old top 10 list. Let's go. The category tonight, other stadium innovations. You know what this is about, Paul?
Yes.
I'll tell you. The Atlanta Falcons are building a new football stadium that will include, get ready, vibrating seats.
Got to have
vibrating
them.
Vibrating seats.
Got to have them, yeah.
Really? Vibrating seats.
Got to have them.
Yeah.
Got to have them.
And you know that not all of them will be vibrating. This will be just in a special vibrating seat section.
Ah.
So you got to get your season tickets well in advance and indicate vibrating or stationary seat. Vibrating or non-vibrating.
Yes.
And send along your pant size. That and a 100-yard bar. A 100-yard bar.
Because long bar.
A 100-yard bar.
For serving drinks.
That's right. Because you just can't get drunk fast enough at the old regular length bars.
That's right.
But that's not all, sports fans. Other stadium innovations. Here we go. Number 10. Cup holder holders. Number 9. Listen to this. On-field parking. It's about time. Number 8. Fully obstructed view seating. Number 7. Why not chimpanzee ushers? Number 6. Shoulder-launched hot dogs. Number 5. Retractable field. Number 4. Every seat gets a throw pillow. Number 3. Even warmer, flatter beer. Number 2. Vibrating condiment pumps. Vibrating condiment pumps. And the number 1 other stadium innovation, valet parking dogs. What? I have no idea what the hell are they talking. There he is.
So those are all good ideas, and we'll definitely incorporate those. But what was good is that's that, you know, 360 by putting some things out there that were just a little different, little edgy, all for thought-provoking reasons, created a buzz like that. So I'll show you. Now let me just close by giving you a video that they prepared kind of for tonight for you, just to give you a little flavor of what they're thinking about. Don't worry about what the designs are. Worry a little bit about really the messaging that they put in the video itself. But with that, I will say goodbye to you. I'll be back over here for any questions you got about the stadium when you get to that point in time, because I'll turn it back to Wes after the video. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Rich. It's not this September? Okay, just checking. Thanks, Rich. Great as always. Ladies and gentlemen, now, 2-time NFL Executive of the Year, The general manager of the Falcons is Thomas Dimitroff.
Good evening. All right. Yes. All right. Well, welcome to the best and the most intelligent football fans in the country. Right on. This is great. First of all, before I move on, congratulations, Rich, all your efforts. What you're doing with the stadium is fantastic. Rich deserves a huge applause for all his efforts on this. Very good. Also, want to take this opportunity to publicly congratulate our head coach. I know this is a while ago, but the three-time coach of the year in the National Football League, Mike Smith, he deserves a huge round of applause. As Rich had mentioned, you know, we're very proud of how the season went last year, understanding that we still have work to do. And I think you will all be happy that we all believe we have a lot of work to do. And never more, as well as we had done last year, we are acutely focused on what we need to continue to build this team into a championship-caliber football team and organization. And we are very, very focused in doing so. Not only myself and Coach Smith, but also the coaching staff and the personnel staff. We were very, very focused on trying to acquire talent and putting this organization together in the right way. What I'm going to do now is I thought we'd do something a little bit different this year. I thought I would allow everyone to get a look under the hood a little bit. We're going to watch a little bit of video together, okay? We're going to talk a little bit about our moves this offseason, show you some video, and then we'll open it up to questions as well when we're through the process here. But what I'd like to say, first of all, everyone knows that one of the things we've talked about since we've been here in 2008 is continuing to re-sign our own players. Very, very important for us. If we draft correctly, we will have no problem signing back our players, as long as financially we can manage that. We made some very, very difficult decisions this year. As you can imagine, four starters left this football team. We thank them very much for their duties here, and they helped us win. But it was time for us to make moves, and it was time for us to make moves not only from a financial standpoint, from a standpoint of continuing, again, to get better in many areas on this football team. Our re-signing of our own, let's talk about that for a minute. When we kicked this off season, in no way did we think we truly were going to have Tony Gonzalez back here. So And I will say, interestingly enough, when I look back to 2009 when we brokered the deal, I was holding my breath that we'd get more than 1 year out of him. Now we're going into five again. We're really, really excited about him. To be able to sign Tony Gonzalez and then move on to Sam Baker, William Moore, sign back Garrett Reynolds and Antone Smith, to name a few, that was big for us. We never in our wildest dreams thought we'd be able to do that, as well as go out into the market and sign two very, very sound individuals on the field and off the field. And we will go on to talking about two individuals here two individuals we're very, very proud of, not only from, again, and you know this about the Atlanta Falcons, not only are we proud of these individuals on the field and their abilities as football players, but their ability off the field to represent you and your team very well and represent us on the off the field in charitable situations and such. So we're very excited about having them on board here. What I'd like to do first, let's jump into a little bit of a video on Steven Jackson here. And I want to give you guys a little bit of a look under the hood here. And let's bear with me here for a minute while we get this thing rolling here. But okay, Steven Jackson, a big dude, okay? We're talking about 6'1", 245 pounds. can run the rock, can catch the rock, will be a very nice, versatile back for us. Okay? This guy's going to come into this football team and provide us with, again, versatility. He's got some of the best drive, if not the best drive, in the whole National Football League. He's been in an organization that he's respected for many years, but he's looking forward to coming into this organization and be a part of something, being able to push us to the next limits that we all know what that is. So Stephen catches the ball well. Stephen runs the rock, as I mentioned here. Let me just fast forward this for a half a second here. Okay. Get one more clip on Stephen. That's what we want, right? This is what we're going to get. We are going to get those one-yard plays this year. There's no question about that. All right. Excellent. Excellent. All right. Next, let's talk about OCU Mignora. So we get our offensive player, guy that we want, leadership ability as well. By the way, these two are showing the best leadership on the football team so far. It's really encouraging for us. OCU Mignora, I think he's a 14-year veteran of the city of Atlanta, which is big. He's coming in here to show this city that he's ready to play for the Atlanta Falcons, bring his two Super Bowl rings here, and show this team what it's about on, again, and off the field about winning championships. So OCU Mignora, for us, we brought him in as a guy who was going to be a right defensive end. Okay, think about that. So let's watch a little bit of footage on. Let me just get that back there for a minute. Excuse me. I'm going to fast forward here for a second. So a right defensive end with a really good feel to get up and around the corner. This guy has the natural instincts to get his hands on the ball, whether he's sacking the quarterback or whether he's getting the ball, knocking the ball loose and getting it into Matt Ryan's hands, which is something that we know is vital for us to win games, right? This is about getting the ball away from the opposing offense. There you go, right? That's what we're talking about, right? Get the ball. Okay. Okay. Oh, and who's he beating there? All right. Oh, one more time. Wait, okay, here we go. All right, last one. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. All right, gentlemen and ladies. Very good. Very good. That's what? That's where the seats vibrate, Rich just said, okay? That's where the seats are going to vibrate. Okay, so we went out in the free agent market and did what we've done every year. We bring in a substantial signing or two this year, which, again, very excited about. We had 11 picks in the draft to mess with. We decided, as usual, because we never sit on our hands with the Atlanta Falcons, correct? We're going to trade for players. We're going to go after the players we want. We ended up trading away two picks for our first-round pick, and we ended up doing what we knew we needed to do and for a player that we knew we were focused on for the entire year, and that was Desmond Trufant. That was who we were focused on. Okay? All of you who followed understand what we did is we traded away a third-round pick, and we traded away a sixth-round pick and ended up getting back a future seven. Understand very, very quickly on this. We knew that we weren't going to be able to get Desmond Trufant in the mid-20s to 30, and we knew that we were going to have to reach out to an ally of ours. That happens to be Les Snead, the general manager with the St. Louis Rams. Fortunately, we were able to broker a deal for the 22nd pick, and instead of the Minnesota Vikings getting him potentially at 23, we picked him up at 22. I think you should all be happy with that. Okay. So Desmond, let's jump under the hood for a couple clips here on Desmond. And Desmond Trufant, fantastic athlete, a high 4'3 guy, 6 feet tall, good size corner, who can fly, who plays urgently, can get his hands on the ball consistently. Okay, let's show that again. Okay. This guy, as you all know who have been following this, he's got a family history in the National Football League. His brother played starting corner for the Seattle Seahawks. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so he's a guy, again, we're expecting a guy to come in here, line up on the right side for us with Asante Samuel on the left side, and continue to develop here. Okay, so just so happens that he's going against our fourth round pick, Levine Taloilo here, who happens to be 6'8". Can you imagine? So we have a corner who's going to be making plays on big guys, small guys, fast guys, and such. So, and on the Saints as well, I guess I should mention that. So this is Desmond Trufant. Again, excited about picking him, moving up 8 picks and picking him in the first round. And again, a guy that we're excited about lining up and doing special things, not only on defense, but potentially on special teams as well. Okay, interestingly enough, so we get him in the first round. This next fellow that we took in the second round, Robert Alford from southeastern Louisiana. Do we have any southeastern Louisiana people here? Okay. Yes, interestingly enough on Robert, we had thought about moving up to draft Robert Alford, and we thought that he was a consideration at pick 30 if we didn't acquire Desmond Trufant. So we were extremely excited the fact that we were able to pull him off the board at pick 60, and you all should. This guy is a fine athlete, very, very fast. He will be the fastest football player on our team in the mid-4.3s. That's what I said, mid-4.3s, fast, makes plays on balls, and yes, there we go. He's got the ability, again, to get his hands on the football. He can run with anyone in this league deep, and he's an urgent football player, who plays all of his plays with urgency, which is something that's kind of our buzz phrase, as you all have been hearing for a while. This is a clip in the Senior Bowl, and you'll see how he makes a play on the ball. That's what we're talking about, right, everyone? We're talking about getting your hands on the football. If you're a defensive back, it's not about watching that ball be completed. It's about knocking a football down. That's what we need to do. So that's Robert Alford, picking him up with our second pick, okay? Now, again, we move on, and we pass on our third pick. Again, part of our move up in the first pick with Desmond Trufant, give away our third-round pick. Our first pick of the fourth round is Malachi Goodman from Clemson. Any Clemson people out here? All right. So what Malachi is, I don't know, have you guys ever seen 37-inch arms? I'm talking 37-inch, 11-inch hands. That's what we talk about in the scouting world. We talk about big. We talk about long. We talk about ability to get around the edge as well. We drafted Malachi Goodman to be a left defensive end. So we have OCU Mignore we picked up in free agency to be our right defensive end, and we drafted Malachi Goodman to come off the left side. Okay? This guy has the ability to play the run. He has the ability to get up and around the edge like that. Show you that for a minute. He's 285 pounds right now with the ability to be 295 if we so desired. We may desire, believe me. Another exciting thing about Malachi was projected by the so-called prognosticators to go in the second round. We were very fortunate to get him in the fourth round. Very fortunate, I say. This guy has the ability to start in this league. To get a starter potentially in the fourth round is something you all should be excited about as well. That was our first fourth round pick. The second fourth round pick, Smitty and I Smitty and I talked about this forever in the draft room, just to give you a little bit of background here. We talked about Levine Tuloilo, and we talked about the next pick, the fifth-round pick, in Malachi Goodman. We weren't sure if we were going to go for Levine or we were going to go for Malachi. We decided to go for Levine Tuloilo. He's a 6'8 tight end. 6'8. Almost 37-inch arms. 36, just shy of 36. As you can tell, you're getting the picture right now. We're talking about long. We're talking about making big plays with long arms. And this guy at 6'8, you can see him moving there. He's not an uncoordinated guy at all. This guy has basketball ability, decided not to play basketball at Stanford, and hopefully he will have the ability to be an heir apparent here, one of the heir apparents here to Tony. We brought him in thinking we'll have an opportunity for him to learn under historically and one of the best in the league, obviously, in Tony Gonzalez. We say to Matt already, and we say to our other quarterbacks, 36-plus inch arms at 6'8", there are very few people who are going to defend passes. So we put the ball high, and we should be able to grab the ball. So, okay, that's Levine Tuloilo. The next pick, okay, so Levine Tuloilo, we're happy with that. Second number two tight end type of guy for us right now while he learns behind Tony. The next pick, fifth-round pick, Stanley Maponga. This guy is a special athlete. For those of you who know about bench press, this guy benches 30 reps at 225 pounds. That's very, very good. That's very good. Yes, it's very good. You got it. That's what Smitty used to bench back in the day when he played linebacker. Right, Coach? He did. He was a rocked-up guy. You guys didn't know that, did you? Okay. Let me get... So Stanley Maponga, we drafted him to be a right defensive end. Though he's coming off the left side here, he's a very athletic guy. He's a very athletic guy who has the ability to bend very easily. He's explosive, and he's got a real nasty, ornery side to him, which we like. Has a way of getting his hands on the passer as well as getting his hands to the ball. Plays with urgency. Key word, right? You guys know urgency, right? We're talking about urgency here. Excuse me on that. Chase the ball. Watch this last clip here. Okay. Just a little view on him. We have a ton of plays on Stanley and his ability to wreak havoc in that defense or in that backfield, and that's what we're hoping for, you know, for years to come here. So that's Stanley Maponga. As a fifth rounder, again, projected him to be a number two. We thought we were going to have to go at number 60 to pick this guy. The fact that we as an organization got this guy in the fifth round, we're extremely fortunate. Okay. Tailing off the back end of the draft here. Here we go. We passed on our sixth round pick, again, part of the trade at the beginning of the draft, and we took two safeties. And you all are wondering why we took two safeties. Interestingly enough, you can never have enough safeties here. You can never have enough safeties who tackle well. And Camille Ishmael is, I think, one of the best tackling safeties in the in the NCAA, and potentially could be in this league. He is a very, very diligent and consistent football player and tackler, and we'll have an opportunity to see him hopefully on special teams. Plays with a lot of urgency. Again, very important for this guy. This guy gets his hands on balls. He disrupts as a defensive back when the ball's in the air. He'll also come up and smack someone in the face, and I say that, Mr. Competition Committee, respectfully and properly, okay, not illegally. But he is one of those guys that wraps up very well, and I think we all know how important wrapping up is, correct? Correct? Yes. So, last clip on Camille, and he is a tough hombre from Miami, Florida, so he's coming in here to be one of our guys here to hopefully help stir up some anger here. Okay. The next safety we took, back-to-back was Zeke Mata from Notre Dame. I don't have any Golden Domers here. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Okay, I know we're all the way down here. Okay, Zeke Mata was another guy we were very, very fortunate to pull off the board in the seventh round. Unfortunately, he's a guy that's going to come in here and support the run very well. He has nice range. He's a big guy who's almost 220 pounds. Would be a guy that could help us on special teams while he develops. And, you know, he was a guy that went a lot later in the draft because he unfortunately did not run the time he wanted to run. But, again, he's a guy that can wreak havoc against offenses in this league, and we're hoping that he develops into a legitimate player in this league. Last but not least, we went for a quarterback, the very last pick we had here from Duke, seventh rounder. Is that a – no, there shouldn't be any. This guy is a very smart individual. He's got the ability to throw the ball down the field for us. We're hoping he comes in here and competes well for that number three position while he develops and learns behind what we think is one of the best, if not the best, quarterback in the National Football League. Matt would not take that as a negotiation tool because Matt's such a good guy, right?
Top 10?
No. we all know better than that, as we're being honest, correct? We're all so excited about having Matt back here for many, many years to come, correct? But this fellow will get a chance to learn behind Matt Ryan, so I think he'll learn a lot from who we already have in place. So that's where we are right now. I wanted to tell everyone, look, I think we've had some very solid drafts here over the years. This offseason and this draft, I've never been more excited about a group together, a whole group. You all should be excited. Thank you for all your support. And again, I truly, truly believe you guys are the best and the most intelligent football fans in this league. Thank you so much.
Thomas, thanks very much. All right. You got the facility. You got the nuts and bolts covered. You're all set. Tape your ankles. Put your eye black on. Ladies and gentlemen, the three-time National Football League Coach of the Year, Mike Smith.
I like it. Hey, what a great turnout tonight. I can't tell you how excited I am for 2013 to get here. It can't get here quick enough, and I want to thank all of you for your continued support. As Thomas has mentioned, as Rich has mentioned, we have the best fans in all of the NFL. There's no doubt about it. And this is one of my favorite events of the non-game playing season. Not the off season, because there is no off season in the NFL. Right? There is no off season. It's 24/7, 365. But I want to tell you a story, and it's kind of like the rest of the story, because some of you may know the first part of this. I was walking in and had an opportunity to see a lot of people, and I know everybody was holding their phones or they're texting, and we live in this world now, don't we? Right? I mean, we live in it. Okay? We all do. I'm guilty of it as well. And I know there's times that I wish we didn't have these things. Right? We all have issues with them at times. I want to tell you a story about when I had an issue with it. And you'll know the first part of this story, most of you, but I'm gonna fill you in on the rest of the story. Okay? New Orleans Saints. Boo! Right? We're playing the Saints in the Georgia Dome. They're running down the sideline, wide receiver. Brent Grimes is in phase, right where he's supposed to be. He goes up, jumps about 40-inch vertical jump, grabs the ball, intercepts it. Basically, we're going to win the football game. What happens? out comes the yellow flag. I'm going berserk. The helm, the headphone comes off. I smash it into about 50 pieces, right? Breaking this headphone on the set. I'm going, oh, my God, afterwards. I'm going, what did I just do? So I'm trying to pick it up. I'm running around, trying to put it together. Our equipment guy's coming, and I'm like, oh, God, I can't believe what I just did. So anyways, we go on. We win the football game. Yes! I was afraid I was going to get 15, but I didn't. So I walk off the field, do my debrief with Reggie Roberts, meet with the press. Luckily, nobody asked about it. But I come into my office, and I didn't have an iPhone. I had a BlackBerry at that time. And that green light was beeping. Beep, beep, beep. I'm going, oh, no. I look down, and it says, Mom. Hey. My 70-something-year-old mother, who I've never received a text from in my life, has texted me. I'm saying to myself, this can't be good. So I hit it, and it says, Kenneth Michael. Okay? Now, let me tell you, when you're called by your first and your middle name, and excuse my language, something's going to hit the fan. So I go on to read. She says, Kenneth Michael, your 7 brothers and sisters, your 11 nieces and nephews, your father and I are very disappointed in the way that you acted on the sideline today. I'm going, oh, man. Where were the days of the rotary phone and the answering machine? Because she knew I saw this. I could have played it off for a couple of days and not have to get back to her. So anyways, that's my story on technology. That's the rest of the story. You know, and Thomas did an outstanding job of kind of previewing for you guys the recalibration of our roster that we've gone through, and we go through it every year. And I want to give you guys a little insight about the NFL. There's only 32 teams that play in the NFL. There's only 32 quarterbacks. There's only 32 free safeties, 32 linebackers. We're at the top of our profession. And every member of the team has ability, all right? Everybody has ability. And it's not just about ability. And this is something that this is a skill set, and this is what we look for in our players, besides what they can do on the field. It's not just about ability. It's about sustainability. You've got to be able to sustain from day to day, okay, from week to week, from season to season, and that's why you have to recalibrate your roster. You've got to have sustainability. The individual has to have sustainability. It's also about accountability. If you're not accountable to yourself, first and foremost, you got no chance of being successful. Our guys hear it from me all the time. First thing you got to do is you got to be accountable for yourself. Then you got to be accountable to the guy on your right, the guy on your left. And if we get that rolling, we got a chance to be successful. And then it's about reliability. You got to be reliable. Everybody's got to make sure that they can rely, that you're going to do your job when you're supposed to do your job. And that's just not the football players. That's everybody in our organization. That's why we've had so much success. The scouts, we got to rely on the scouts. The scouts got to rely on the coaches. Everybody has to rely on one another. And then you got to have flexibility. Doesn't really matter what business you're in. You got to have flexibility as well. If you don't have flexibility, you got no chance of being successful. So my guys, you can ask me, oh, coach is going to talk about ability again. He knows that next thing that's coming, it's sustainability, it's reliability, it's flexibility, it's accountability. Those are the abilities when we're looking at a skill set of a football player that we really want to dig into. And we've done a great job. We've got a great locker room. You win in the locker room first. I really believe that. You've got to have a great locker room, and we do. And we're real excited. Now, I've got I've got off script. I want to get back on it here real quick. We are real excited about this 2013 season starting. This year, more than any year since our first year, is probably going to be the most competitive in certain positions. In the offensive line position, with the retirement of Todd McClure, and we had to make a move with Tyson Clabo because of salary cap ramifications, there is going to be an open, big competition with our offensive line. And we got some young guys that we've drafted, and they're ready to step in and do it. I can't say to you right now who's going to be the guy that's going to line up there, but it's going to be very, very competitive. At the center position, Peter Kotz, who ended up playing tackle for us, he's going to move in, play center, compete with Joe Holly. Garrett Reynolds, who was injured, will be competing with Mike Johnson. Lamar Holmes, who we drafted last year in the third round, will be working at the right tackle, competing with Mike Johnson. We're going to cross-train these guys. We have to. We only have seven of them up on game day. So it's going to be very competitive. It's also going to be different in our secondary. Obviously, we draft for need, and Thomas and his staff did a great job in acquiring what we needed in this draft. We needed to add DB depth, and we did that. We did it at the beginning of the draft with our first and second round pick. We did it at the end of the draft and with the safeties. And we've got two corners that have great skill set. You saw the tape. You saw what they're capable of doing. Both Desmond and Robert are going to be good football players for the Atlanta Falcons. But this is a league that you earn what you get, okay? You earn what you get in the NFL. And we've got to get back to work, and that's what we've done. But I really like the pieces that we've put together. We have got a really solid group of veteran leadership, which you have to have, intermingled and mixed with younger but very talented football players. We started our phase one. I hope this works. Yeah, we started our phase one. Okay, here's the recalibration. Thomas really went through that in depth and very, very well. We started our phase one of our offseason on Monday, April 22nd. So we've been going at it for almost a month now, okay? We started it on the 22nd of April. Our players had started out working in the weight room. Let me say this, though. We had a large group of players, you'll be glad to hear this, that really started working out about March 15th. And that says a lot about your Atlanta Falcon football team and their... their ability to realize when it's time to come back to work. The new collective bargaining agreement says there's certain days that we can start working with them. They were in about 3 weeks early. I think that gives us a big jump. It was something that they did on their own, led by our quarterback, Matt Ryan. He's always the first one in. Yes. And I believe this. You can't win. Okay, you can't win and get into the playoffs in March and April and in June, but you sure can hamper your chances of it by what you do in March, April, and June. And the work that we've put in thus far has been great. We started phase two, all right? We started phase two last week. Phase two, we can go out on the field and work. We had a rookie mini camp. We got an opportunity to see these guys by themselves, separate from the rest of the football team. Tuesday was the first time that we had our whole football team together in 2012. And I want to tell you, as your head coach, it was a really, really great day to have that whole group out there and having them integrate together, the rookie class and the veterans come together and start practicing. And that's what we started this week. And they've done a very good job through the first week. We'll finish that off next week, and then the Tuesday after we have Memorial Day, we're going to get into OTAs. And OTAs are when we can actually go out there and play football against one another. Okay, we can't compete against one another, but we can go out there and play. It's non-contact, but we can get some things done working against each other. And then we finish off at the end with our mini camp from Tuesday the 18th of June to Thursday the 20th of June. And like always, it will be open to the public, and we need for y'all to come out and see us. Okay. Let me just give you a brief overview, too. The regular season. Okay. We've talked about our non-game playing season. Now let's talk about our regular season. I want to back up and mention that in our preseason, we're going to be playing the Cincinnati Bengals in the first game. The Bengals will be coming in and practicing against us on Monday and Tuesday before we play them. So we'll have 2 days of work against the Bengals before we play them on our first preseason game. So if you're planning on coming out to Flowery Branch, it would be a great opportunity to see us working against some other folks. We'll be the Monday and Tuesday prior to our game on Thursday, our first preseason game. If you ask me, Coach, when do you want to play your games? Ideally, I'd like them to all be 1 o'clock on Sunday for 16 straight weeks. It's not happening, okay? When you have the success that we've had over the last 5 years, you're going to get Monday night games, Sunday night games, Thursday night games, 5 of them, right? Right. We started off early on in our season with the New England Patriots on a Sunday night. That ought to be a fun night in the Dome. We come back the following week at home against the Jets, playing on Monday night. I love your confidence. Yes. Then before we get into the fourth quarter of the season, we play the New Orleans Saints on Thursday night. And then we come back and have the Green Bay Packers. We go to Lambeau Field on the road, right, on Sunday night. And then we finish up with a Monday night game against the San Francisco 49ers out in San Francisco. Yep. There is no easy schedule in the NFL. Okay? Every week, you got to go out and play your best game. Our guys are looking forward to it. The group of men that we've put together and that we have in our locker room right now are going to be the guys, for the most part, that are going to go to start the season and go to war for us as an organization. We are very, very excited about it. It can't get here fast enough, right? It can't. And this brings me to my last point that I want to wrap up. I've talked to the team about it, and I'm going to share it with you as well, all right? And I've heard it a lot. Okay, after I came out of a week and a half of not sleeping and not watching the Super Bowl, I heard a lot of people talking about we were 10 yards away. Listen, folks, that was 2012. Our only focus right now is on 2013. We're not 10 yards from the Super Bowl. We're like every other team in this league fighting to get to the same place. We're 261 days from going to New York and getting a chance to go play in that. Right? So we're done talking about that 10 yards. We're moving on and looking forward, folks. It can't get here quick enough. Wes talking about how many games to the first day of the season. That's when we have our opportunity to go out and tell people and make people understand what kind of football team and what kind of organization we are. Thank you so much. You guys are the absolute best.
Who's ready to go play? Just raise your hand. If you're ready to go, okay. Just checking. By the way, this is a sensational turnout, and we want to thank everybody for coming out and being a part of this. Now, many of you, when you received your invitation, were also good enough to submit questions, and now we get an opportunity to handle some of those. Now, due to the size of the crowd, and just so you know, this is 2.5 times bigger than last year's event, which was the biggest ever, as I recall, right, Rich? So now this is the biggest ever State of the Franchise meeting. And congratulations again for a great effort. Now, we've got some questions that folks did submit, and if we have some remaining time, which I don't think will be likely tonight, we may get to some others. But we do have folks who are here to ask questions tonight that they submitted. And when I call your name, if you'll come to the microphone, Chantel, is that right?
Yes.
She has our first question tonight. Chantel.
Hi, I'm from Kansas City, and I enjoyed watching Tony Gonzalez as a Kansas City Chief. And I know we touched on this a little bit earlier, but I would like to know how you convinced Tony to stay with us another season or longer after he announced that he was going to retire, or his intention to retire, at the end of the playoff game.
Oh, that's a great that's a great question, and I'm sure glad that we got the outcome that we did, Chantel. But I'll give you a little history about it, and you guys are probably very aware of it from the outside. But Tony came out right before we started training camp and talked to the press and said that he was 95% sure that this was going to be his last season. Tony and I had had a conversation about it before he was going to go and talk to the press, as well as with Thomas and some other people in the organization. I told Tony, I'm not going to talk about it after this day. I'm just hoping for that 5% that we're going to be okay. But I'm not going to readdress this during the season, and nor should you. And he didn't. He went through the season. The season ended not quite what we wanted to get accomplished, and Tony was still intent on not playing anymore. He was going to retire. He had made some commitments to his family in terms of what he was going to do. And as a football player, it takes a lot of time away from your family. And Tony's got children that are now going to be teenagers, and he had talked to them about being able to experience some of his activities. Well, I talked with Tony. I said, Tony, we need to have a conversation to see if that 5% is, there's a possibility. He said, Smitty, I'm going to talk it over with my family. They talked it over, talked to his son, Nico, his mother, some other family members, and had that conversation. And then I said, Tony, I tell you what, I don't want to do this over the phone. Let me hop on a plane, come out and have dinner with you, and let's really talk about this. So we went out and we had dinner, had an opportunity to talk. The chances of him playing were kind of leaning a little bit. Now, I don't know how this happened, but Roddy White was calling him, Matt Ryan was calling him, Arthur Blank was calling him, Thomas Dimitroff was calling him. I mean, I didn't even know any of this was going on. I mean, we even had some defensive guys. Asante Samuel was calling him. But I really didn't know any of this was happening. But anyways, then Thomas, you know, once he decided that he's going to come back, we were very excited. And we're a better football team with Tony Gonzalez on our roster. And we are sure glad he is with us.
Hey, you boys can recruit.
Hey, Wes, is everybody supposed to believe that Mike didn't orchestrate that recruiting? Are we supposed to believe that or not? I didn't know.
No, I think we're good, Rich. Thanks. I would also like to add, too, that I think the fan support that Tony got from the fans of Atlanta and the love that the city of Atlanta has shown him in 5 years has really been impressive, too. And you deserve part of the return of Tony Gonzalez as well for this 2013 season. William? I think William is next over here. Gentlemen?
All right. My question is for Rich McKay. Do you anticipate using personal seat licenses to help fund the new stadium? And if so, what price range do you expect them to cost the season ticket holders?
Well, I really appreciate that it only took us two questions to get to the PSL question. Here's what we've said, and here's what we're going to do. We said from the very beginning that we do believe PSLs will be part of this program. We will not. First of all, you all know Arthur, and you know what he stands for, his values, and how he wants to deliver this stadium. We will not be at the levels that were done in Dallas, done in New York, done in other places. Ours will be a much more modest program. I can assure you of that. There's two things at play here. Number one is change. Change is never easy. And we talk about it every single day. We talked about it with the architects yesterday, which is you guys all have seats in the dome, and you have a location, and you have a little community around you. We've got to do the best job we can do from a customer service standpoint in making sure that when you go through the process of reseating into a new stadium that you're comfortable with it, that we treated you right, that you had options, and that we handled the whole process right, both from a pricing and from a placement standpoint. And I can give you our assurance that that's what we talk about every day. Doesn't mean it's going to be perfect, but it is, I can assure you, from Arthur's perspective, it's the most important thing we can do. When will we get there? When we finish the design, the conceptual design, which we actually think is not too far off, we then begin schematic. When we do schematic design, we actually create seats and a whole stadium, if you will. When that stadium and we know what the capacity is and how the seating is going to be arranged, then we'll begin to price it. I can just tell you that you have our assurances. You will not see the prices you have seen either in the AJC or in other cities. We'll try to make it as fan-friendly as it can be, because in the end, we realize change is difficult. We also think that when we deliver the final product, I have a sense you'll really be proud, and I hope that we do really move the needle for you from a fan experience standpoint. So that's my answer.
All right, Monique is next. Hi, Monique.
Hello. My question is, since the new stadium will be basically the fans' new home as well, will any of the fans be able to give suggestions or feedback for the new stadium?
Okay, that's a really good question. Yeah, the answer is yes. What we're going to do is, some of you may have been at, over the years, we always have a bunch of fan forums during the year. We bring fans in, we ask them questions, how we doing, how we not doing, how was your travel, what's important to you. We ask all those types of questions. This year, we're not going to have those forums. Our forums are going to all be new stadium. We'll do it at probably four home games, if not five. We'll bring in at least 150 of you at one time. We'll bring the architects in the room. We're going to show you the drawings. We're going to show you the various amenities. We're going to show you various things we're thinking about, and then get your feedback, because in the end, you know the answers better than we do. So that's our intent.
Admir, yes, sir, you're next.
Yes, guys. First of all, I want to say thank you all for making our team relevant the last 5 years. Regular season wins, multiple playoffs appearances, something we can all be proud of. And thank you all. My question is regarding Matt Ryan's contract extension, and just to give us a status on where we stand on that. So thank you all.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Matt Ryan. Let me throw it out to the masses. Do we want Matt Ryan back? I think that answers the question. Obviously, Matt's going to be here for a long time with us, and we're hoping to win many, many more games and many bigger games in the future. There's no time frame on this right now. I can't be specific. What I will say is we will be working diligently over the next few months to make sure we secure someone who we believe is one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League.
Excellent. Brandon is next. Brandon, your question.
Falcon fan as long as I can remember, guys, going back to the days of a youth, and very thankful as well for all of the successes that you guys have brought as a team. Thank you very much. But I know this question might be a little difficult to answer, but having been to numerous other stadiums over the years and heard many, if not most, have modified play-by-play announcers do some of the action. I'm wondering why the team doesn't do more besides some of the ear-splitting music here and there. It seems that there's a level of staleness during many parts of the game. Not that I need someone telling me all parts of the game or doing play-by-play, but it would be a little bit more football-like to hear a strong voice doing some narrative here and there.
Okay, I'll take that, I guess. I understand your point.
We can get them radios.
Let's talk about in-game.
Just kidding.
Don't get him started. Don't get him started. Okay?
It's Arch, not me. No,
don't
sorry.
Get him started. Arch is very conservative. It's Wes I'm concerned about. In-game entertainment. First of all, I want you to know how much time and effort that Roddy White puts into game entertainment.
Now, not that Roddy White.
No, hold it. No. Remember now, listen, we're not talking about 84. We're talking about the real Roddy White, okay, who actually runs in-game entertainment for us. But it is not – in-game entertainment is not easy. Let me tell you why. Because we could just go around this room and talk about your taste in music, and I got a feeling there's going to be about – you know, you're going to say, oh, I like this, but I don't like this. And then you're going to say, no, but I like that, but I don't like that. And that always creates a problem for us. And so one of the things we did way back when was we went with much more of a brand campaign. And we got rid of the idea of ever having an ad campaign. We went to brand campaign. We called it Rise Up. And what we decided in that was that was a unifying message for all of us. And really spoke to what Atlanta was all about. So we've tried to, and you'll see again this year, incorporate more and more themes during the game that are Rise Up driven, and you will see us do that. We also have a new campaign that will be Rise Up driven coming out in a little while that I think you will really enjoy, because the people that do that campaign for us are incredibly creative. But in the stadium, I just want you, we are always surveying you. We did it again this year. We went virtually talked to everybody we could talk to. We categorize it all, and we rethink the entire game day experience. So we're not perfect. We can't speak to every fan because everybody's perspective is different. We always think that we've got to deliver more replays to you, and we will. Just remember that when the replay involves the other team and there's a question of a challenge, somehow that replay may not show up. It's unbelievable how it right at that moment it malfunctions. But with respect to the referee replays, the under the hoods, you should see all of them. We try to show you all of them. We're going to show you all of them. You ought to have access to many more things that the people at home have, and that is our object, and that's what the standard you should hold us to. But it's not as easy. When we get to the music idea, it just presents challenges. I just want you to understand.
Tanisha, is that right? Thank you and your question.
I want to say thank you for allowing me this opportunity to be here today and represent the team that I love so much. Not only am I a ticket holder, I also make every away game.
Oh, there we go. Oh, wait a second now. Let's go.
So my question is, do you feel the new crown of helmet rule will reduce the number of head injuries in the NFL?
Mike. I'll take it. Okay, crown of helmet rule is a rule that I am on the competition committee, which is the rules committee, and we put a new rule in this year, the crown of the helmet rule. What's the rule all about? Well, when you watch the tape and you see these crown of the helmet hits, they're hits where a player has, outside of the tackle box, lowered their head and delivered the blow with the crown of their head. That could be a runner, and that could be a tackler. Why did we put the rule in? Because when we show the plays to coaches like Mike or anybody else in the league, the first thing every coach says is, we would never teach anybody to do that. They're putting their neck at risk, and they're putting their head at risk, and we would never teach that. That doesn't mean it hasn't shown up in our game a little more than it should. We are the standard bearer of football. We have to show the way. So if it's showing up in high school and it's showing up in youth football with people playing the game by lowering their head in such a way, then we need to get that technique out of the game. The game is a great game. We've made rules changes since 1900 in this game, and every time they've been made, those people on talk radio, I guess in the early days they did it by a can or something, because I'm not sure they had real radio, complained that, oh, the game's going to get too soft. What they didn't do when they complained about that was talk to the players playing the game, because the game's never gotten soft. It's a tough physical game. But we do feel comfortable that this is not going to be a rule that's going to be over-officiated. It's not going to result in a lot of penalties. And our object is not just to make the game safe on game day, but to make the game safer for the players when they leave the game 10 years after the game, 20 years after the game, and 30 years after the game. That's the intent of the rule.
Our next question, Reba.
Hello. I want to thank you guys for giving us such a product to be proud of. And I can argue with my coworkers because we do have a quality team. And I want to thank you for that. And to ensure that I can make future games, I want to ask how far in advance will the fans be informed on the new stadium ticket packages?
Yeah. Darn. Mike. the answer is, you know, I don't know. I would tell you it would be a couple years. It won't be in 2014 or 15 because it'll depend so much on the configuration of the stadium and where all the seats are located. But again, I know it's hard to say that I want to make your fears feel less with respect to what may come. But remember who Arthur is. Remember what we stand for, what the organization stands for. The object of this stadium was not to move the needle financially. The object of the stadium was to create a long-term solution for Atlanta that lets us not just be the premier football team we are and are going to be, but also to make this city a really special place to play events. That's what this stadium can do. But I couldn't tell you that it'll be in the next 6 months. I can tell you it'll probably be in the next 18 months. That's probably when I would think we would get to that issue.
Next is it Marcus?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, sir.
My question is for Rich. With the new stadium, what's being done as far as parking, not just parking decks or MARTA, to ensure the tailgating experience isn't ruined?
Now we got a positive question, and I am jacked. Here we go. So where the Georgia Dome is, we'll obviously all become surface parking. It will be, we think, the greenest parking lot there is anywhere, anytime, any place. It's not going to be a blacktop with white lines on it. It'll certainly be tailgating available. In the designs to the stadium, in certain of the areas around the stadium, the architects, including the ones that didn't win in the whole competition, really came up with some creative ways for parking, to deal with parking. And it motivates us, as Arthur says to the Congress Center all the time. One of our number one complaints is the fact that we do not have enough surface parking lots for tailgating. By the same point in time, we want to be sensitive to the community, and we don't want to necessarily jump north side and just create a bunch of parking lots, because that doesn't move the needle for that community with respect to retail and development. So we do like the fact that on the north end of the property, assuming the stadium got done in the south, I think you would see a lot of added parking in what's now the yellow lot. So we are very cognizant of the issue. We want to create as much as we can without adversely impacting the community, and we're not driven by parking decks. The reason parking decks are part of our solution is because the George World Congress Center has an ongoing business, a very successful business, and that business involves a lot of days when they have a lot of people needing to come in and use those decks. So when we put our stadium as their tenant, then we're going to also use those decks. But it's not the design of ours, because we understand that parking decks are pretty easy to get into and feel pretty good, not so easy to get out of.
Thanks for the question. Lavather, I think you're next, ma'am.
Yes, I am. I'd like to say thank you again for creating great fan experiences. And one of the things that we've done in the past that I would really like to see reinstituted, and my question is, will the players' luncheon and or the women's football clinic be reinstituted? And if so, when?
Go ahead, Rich. Wes, did you line the questions up? The answer is that let's talk about, first of all, with players' luncheon and women's clinic. First of all, it's a football clinic. It's not a women's clinic, because there was a lawsuit somewhere that said that you can't really say that, so it's a football clinic. The football clinic was a great event for us, always very successful, always well attended, always very, very, very difficult to schedule. We couldn't figure out if we should schedule it in the season, and then it was a problem for the coaches and the players that we used in the off season. It was a little more of a challenge to make sure everybody was around.
it is an event that we felt like added value and that you as fans liked, and I would think it is an event that will come back. The luncheon, a lot more challenging. There are very few teams still doing the luncheon because the luncheon becomes a pretty big distraction at the most critical point in time of the whole season. And it really becomes one where we bring 90 players to the luncheon. About 30 of them are in a depressed state thinking that they may not make the team, and yet they have to attend a luncheon. So it creates some angst for us. So I would say that I think the football clinic would have a good chance to come back, and it's something that now that it's on a question we'll focus on. I'm not sure about the banquet, that the banquet moves the needle enough for us to make it enough value for you.
I believe Jeremiah, is that right?
Actually, it's Cliff.
Cliff, I'm sorry. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Well, first
of
all,
a friend of Jeremiah's.
All right, this coach. This question's for the coaching staff. And actually, what I was going to ask is, given the fact we were 10 yards short of reaching the Super Bowl and that both playoff games, the defense allowed basically 20 points after shutting down both offenses, have we done enough this offseason to take that next step forward and not only reach but win the Super Bowl?
Okay. Well, I think I answered part of that question earlier about the 10 yards, but I think we've made a lot of moves in the offseason. And when you recalibrate your roster, it is a process that starts right when the season's over, and it's a long process. We just finished it up with the draft, and I think we've made the moves that will help us be a better football team in 2013 than we had in 2012. In regards to giving up points in the two last games, be very transparent, we're not happy about that. It's tough to win in this league, and we have to make sure that we always have the best players that we possibly can. That's why we go through this vetting in the off season to improve our football team. I can assure you this, we've spent every waking moment as a coaching staff looking not only schematically at what we do, but what other people do so we can be better as coaches. I know Thomas and his staff have done an outstanding job in giving us talented players that will help us win football games. So thank you. I hear you.
I'm willing to bet this is Jeremiah.
This is Jeremiah.
Got it.
I just want to say it's a pleasure to be up here addressing you guys directly. And then I also had a little short story about Mr. Blank. I pass him jogging quite a few times, and I always yell, "Go Falcons," out the window, and he always waves at me. And the last time I did that, I yelled, "Go Falcons," out the window, and he looked a little winded. And when he waved, I couldn't tell if he was waving or calling for help. So I was late for work, so I couldn't stop. So if you could apologize to him for me, I'd appreciate that.
That might have been too much information.
I feel confident it was.
All right, well, my question is, do you think our offensive line is good enough, and what improvements have we made for run blocking this year, and is that a big focus?
Okay, I know Smitty touched on the offensive line a little bit earlier. What I will say is, first of all, ultimately the offensive line is set up to protect number two. We all agree with that, correct? We need him to be protected. We last year, I believe we were 17th in giving up sacks, so we're mid-pack. We need to improve, no question about it. We have two very, very good offensive line coaches in Pat Hill and Paul Dunn. They do a heck of a job schooling our players. The one thing I think everyone needs to understand about our movement, and Mike had mentioned it about a center and a tackle moving on, and did a great job for us over the years. We had drafted young guys to learn and be schooled along the way, and this is the time where they need to step up. Potentially Lamar Holmes and Mike Johnson competing for that right tackle spot, and Garrett Reynolds competing back for that guard spot, and Joe Hawley. This is their time, as I mentioned before. We need to do this. All of our offensive line are drafted in different areas. Tyson Klebo, who was here before, Todd McClure, they were later round picks and free agents. It's time for our young guys to continue to develop, and we have to have faith in them. Matt Ryan has faith in them, and we do as a staff. So rest assured, we feel that we've done a really good job pulling together our offensive line. Have faith in them. They're going to get off the ball. It's going to be helpful that we have Steven Jackson in the backfield to help run the rock and get behind those big guys that we have. We're averaging over 320 pounds, 325, I believe, right now, potentially even more. And we're looking forward to continuing to have some beef on the O-line.
Excellent. Thank you. Janine has our last question of the night. Janine.
Well, if you've been waiting for an easy question, I have written it. My question is about the Rise Up campaign. At the end of the season last year, the organization seemed to field several surveys about the Rise Up campaign, and I think it's a perfect and very apt slogan for our city and for our team. And I think Mr. McKay has already answered this question, but I wanted to know what is the plans and what did you learn from the survey about the Rise Up campaign?
Thank you, Janine.
Thank you. I would say that we learned that it is what we wanted it to be. It's about who we are. It's about our brand. It's not a sales campaign. And I think all the fans told us that, number one, they like it. It still has incredible recognition throughout the market, whether you're Falcon fans or not Falcon fans. You will see it. It will modify itself over time, but it will be a part of our DNA. And hopefully Sam Jackson will be back next year. But he might have relatives that get in this act, too. So it'll be a fun campaign. We want to have fun with it. We want you to enjoy it. We want you to be proud of it. And we want you to, when you see Arthur jogging on the street, don't say, "Go Falcons." Say, "Rise up." That's all I have, Wes.
Excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, Rich McKay, Thomas Dimitroff, Mike Smith. Thank you all very much. Don't forget, for the latest information, AtlantaFalcons.com. Preseason in August, and we'll see you on September the 8th. Good night and God bless.